In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey, welcome to EMS Office Hours. Sorry for the delay, everybody. Just having some communication issues with the landline calling into the show. I apologize for that. I know we had about maybe 2 minutes of dead air. We're waiting for Josh and for Dave to give us a call in. They're going to be calling in via landline, hopefully, so we can get the show up and going. While we're waiting for Josh and Dave to call in, just want to remind you to follow us over on Twitter. We're at EMS Safe on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. It's facebook.com/EMS Office Hours. And, of course, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for the show, you can send them to our email address. It's contact@EMSOfficeHours.com. And we of course, will bring those questions and comments and discussions into the live shows when we do them. So if you're not comfortable calling us on the air through the call-in number or coming into the chat room and chatting with us, we're more than happy to take your questions and comments and suggestions via email, so it's anonymous if you want to be anonymous, and you can still have your voice heard that way as well. So we're going to try to get Josh in here at least and get the show going a little bit while we wait for Dave to come on board. Josh, are you with us?
I am.
All right, Josh. Apologize for that.
No problem.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I was having some issues with Skype. It wouldn't let me drag you guys into the group conversation for some reason. They just updated their software like twice in the past 2 days or something. So I think they might not have worked that glitch out yet. So I have to send them a support ticket on that, let them know that that's happening. But hopefully Dave will be able to give us a call via landline as well. I was just mentioning, Josh, some of the social media venues that people can get a hold of us on. Of course, you know, Josh, you have your own Facebook page as well at wantanew.com. It's facebook.com/wantanew, WANTYNU. You know, people can check us out there as well and check out what you have going on. They're sort of separate from the EMS Office Hours show. We're going to talk a little bit about today, Josh. I know you probably might have seen the episode title. I want to kind of talk a little bit about how we have a lot of time issues when in EMS, and while some of it I think is valuable and is needed, I think sometimes people can get caught up in that time element, you know, where we're sort of stuck in this idea that we have to be on scene X amount of minutes and off scene X amount of minutes to provide good patient care. But then what happens is I think a lot of times we end up not providing patient care because we're so busy worrying about transport, that, you know, procedures and clinical interventions that we do don't get done that might benefit the patient if they had that on board earlier. I think Dave might be with us, Josh. So before we get too deep into the discussion, I'm going to try to bring him in here real quick.
All right. Sounds good.
Sorry Hello? About that. Dave, is that you?
It's me. Can you hear me?
It is. Yes, I can.
That's good.
I can. Yeah, but Dave, I was telling Josh. Yeah, we're going back to the roots of calling in via landline. I'm actually on Skype with Blog Talk Radio. So I'm not sure why I wasn't able to drag you guys in. I've even rebooted it a few times. But for whatever reason, I'm not sure what it is. I'm sure the listeners could care less about us and our Skype dilemma here. So before we get into the whole... What's that, Dave?
Listeners care.
You broke up a little bit, Josh. What'd you say?
I think you lost Josh.
Hey, I said,
oh.
Yeah, Josh is...
Hello?
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 Okay, I hear you guys great.
All right. Well, I know you were you were kind of fading in and out a little bit, Chuck. I'm not sure what was going on there.
Okay.
Sorry
well, I'm on. I'm out in the Poconos again, so I'm in a hotel.
That could be one. Yeah, that could very well be it. Poconos, big shot.
Yes. Yes, most in the Poconos with the something in the Poconos. Your host
right.
in the Poconos or host in the Poconos?
I don't know about that.
Hey, I have a host. I'm a co-host, so I'm in the Poconos.
Right.
That almost works.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to annoy somebody else again because, you know, we were talking about.
Wait, here it comes. Here it comes, Josh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you heard, Dave, that last week with our question about some particular smells on the ambulance, we annoyed a listener who sent Jim a nasty message.
Oh, well, I had no idea.
It wasn't nasty. It was just, you know, that somebody saying that they really care about that type of thing. And, you know, nobody wants to hear our banter. But, you know, this is my damn show. If I want to banter, I'm going to banter. Banter. But, you know, listen, like any talk show, any opinion-related show, there's an element of the hosts and guests on the show talking about their personal experiences and talking about, you know, what their overall interests are and how that relates to the show and how that relates to EMS. So it's not always, you know, hi, welcome to EMS Office Hour. We're talking about 1280 kg, you know, inferior talk.
I think there's something more important that needs to be sort of driven across the wires here, is that you, me, and Dave are a real EMS. We go in this. You know, every week, you know, not every, sometimes every day, and we're out there really putting it on the line, really experiencing these patient calls, you know, learning the new protocols and such. We're not some, you know, guys who have a nursing degree and happen to have a paramedic degree as well or something like that and talking about the theoretical situations. I mean, we do theory occasionally, but, you know, we're talking about what's real out there. And sometimes, you know, coffee is real.
Sometimes it
getting the cold cups, you know.
Yeah, right. Sometimes it stinks. Well, sometimes it stinks, like Dave says.
You know, we have to get that in there.
And the thing is, too, I think, you know, there are other EMS podcasts out there that they're great podcasts and great educated EMS personalities that produce those shows. And they focus a lot on, like you said, a lot of the clinical aspect of EMS. They get right into it. They don't sort of dilly-dally around and give a lot of personal insight to things. And that's their format of their show, which is cool. So people that are looking for that, they can certainly go to those podcasts and listen to those. But I think, because I listen to those podcasts myself, and I think there's a balance of being able to sort of get that point of view, that opinionated point of view, based on real life experience and based on sort of what gets discussed in the ambulance, what we do here on EMS Office Hours, right? EMS Office Hours, it's the office hours, what goes on, what's discussed inside the ambulance, in the crew rooms, and this is what we try to bring out on the show. And the other shows, they focus more on that educational aspect a lot of times. They focus more on like the hard news of EMS, and those are great formats. So I think it depends upon what you're looking for when you're listening to these types of podcasts. You know, of course, I don't want to lose listeners and say, you know, go there and listen, go do all your book learning someplace else, because we do offer some insight with that too as well on this show. But I think there's just sort of a little bit of a balance on how, you know, what to expect, I guess, when you come listening to the show. With that said,
you know,
I'm shut about
look,
that.
It's my opinion, Jim, but it's all about delivery. If I want the dry, you know, technical information, I'll sit through a CME. You know, I'll go to Dave's class.
Yeah.
I knew that was
coming.
You knew that was coming, right?
I felt it.
Yeah. But,
I think
you know,
we have a call on the line.
Go ahead.
Right,
bring in the
exactly.
call.
We're calling a lot. I think it's Donald. I think he's joining us again. So let's see if we get him. Don, is that Donald? Is that you?
Yeah, it's the new guy. How's everybody doing?
Yeah.
FNG, man, FNG.
Can y'all hear me all right?
I hear you. You're a little staticky. I guess you're on the road again.
Yeah, I'm heading home from work. Long 12-hour day, so.
Yeah, I hear you.
I've got a hands-free earpiece thing. If you need me to just hold my phone like normal, that'd be better. One of those. But I don't have an air conditioning blowing into my microphone like somebody does.
Right. Okay, that's good.
Right. Yeah.
Well, what I want to kind of get into tonight, guys. What, Josh? Go ahead.
When Don grows up, he'll get one.
Right. Yeah.
We may need to institute a system where we say over, because when we have two voices going, we're losing all the quality. Over.
Well, we have a bunch of Yankees all talking. I see there's a lot of talking there, so I'm just saying.
Hey, we can fit a lot of words into a minute. So
I'm not a Yankee.
Well, you're being assimilated, Jim.
Oh, okay.
You're
an Astros. I'm also from Connecticut. My dad's from Arkansas, so I'm kind of half Yankee.
Oh.
Yeah, you got to live up here. It has to be injected into your veins, man. Jim, you're starting out with this conversation about time. And, you know, if you want to look at that aspect, there's we get the clinical aspect of time, the golden 10 minutes, the golden hour, you know, whatever you want to use as those euphemisms. But our entire, you know, if you think about it, everything we do is surrounded by time. The time it takes to train us, the time we have to learn on the job, the time that we're actually doing the job, the shift work between 8, you know, between 8 in the morning and 4 p.m. or between 6 and 6 or tour 1s, tour 2s, tour 3. Everything we do is about time.
Yeah.
So at what point, you know, would you not expect us to make our judgments based on time?
Well, I think it's important that we have time constraints. You know, you talk about being on scene for a set amount of time for certain call types, you know, traumas and, MIs and strokes and things like that. And I think it's important to kind of focus on that. That allows us to be able to get patients to more definitive care that we can't do in the field. But I think that what ends up happening sometimes is that we can end up kind of rushing the scene and not getting everything done because we're doing is thinking about we got to get off the scene. You know what I'm saying? So you can end up getting to the patient, seeing that there's, okay, this is a trauma patient, we got to get him off the scene, but you can overlook something that's going on with the patient, you know.
Right.
And maybe not discover that until you're almost at the hospital when you get to the point, because everything's such a rush, right? So you get to the point where now you're reassessing your patient, you continue to reassess your patient, and then you find something that you didn't see the first time around, okay? And now you're rolling into the ER, and you're like, okay, this is going, oh, yeah, by the way, there's a gunshot wound over here, too. You know, I forgot to mention that when I gave you my report, you know, twice around.
You're referring to that Brooklyn job where the guy was put on a longboard and brought to a trauma hospital, and he had a superficial wound in an extremity, and they let him sit, and when they rolled him, he died. When they rolled him over on the longboard, he had a bullet in the back.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is what I'm talking about, where, yeah, you get the patient to the hospital in that time frame, but there is that element of missing something. Now, I think, thankfully, most of the time, we don't miss those things. But it does happen. And then you've got the aspect of the thing where, okay, I was so busy taking vital signs and reassessing my patient and calling in a report and things like that, I didn't get a chance to get an IV established. you know, and then you walk into the emergency room and look at you like you, you know, you had some kind of carnal sin because you didn't get an IV started, and they're all, they act, look at you, they're looking down their nose at you, you didn't do your job, you know. Not realizing that you had those, you know, you don't have the luxury that the emergency department has of having 12 people in that trauma bay or having X amount of people in that, you know, doing that stroke evaluation. It's just you in the back of the ambulance while your partner's driving lights and sirens to the hospital, you know. So at what point do we take a step back and say, okay, you know what, maybe it's a platinum 10 minutes or whatever you want to call it. Maybe we could, you know, when we look back, we can make it a platinum 12 minutes and take that additional 2 minutes to do that IV, to do an assessment so that we don't miss anything, you know?
I think there's two different things that need to be talked about here. You know, are we talking about being rushed on our, you know, on our high priority twos and ones? And being fearful that, like, well, I was so busy I wasn't able to get bilateral 16s. I only got a 22 in the finger. Or are we talking about, you know, there's also the whole conversation of priority threes and not really being able to do a proper assessment, not being able to do a proper report to the nurse because you gotta do your total task time. You gotta get into the hospital, get report, and get out of the hospital as quick as possible. And so that...
Well, that's... Yeah, I mean, listen, Donald...
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's two different conversations regarding time, and if there's two different types of frustrations there.
Hey, that's part of it, too, I think, John, is that issue, too, is the element of time where it's affecting the patient that you're with, and then the element of time when you're talking about an organization or an agency that wants you on a scene, off a scene, in and out of a hospital within a certain time frame to get back into service, and then what does that affect? Is that affecting patient care as well? Is that affecting documentation? You know, is that affecting your you know, just your personal sort of, you know, time management on each individual call?
I think the bigger thing go ahead.
Yeah, I need an air horn.
Dave?
I'm here. I'm going to throw a little bit of a case scenario into the fire.
Uh-oh.
You ready?
Go.
It's not going to test you medically. It's just going to test the question of time. We all understand, at least we've been trained to believe that serious trauma needs to be into surgery. That's where they need to be. That's
right.
What the 10 minutes and 1 hour is about. So,
right, right.
And you're complaining, you know, and I'm not saying you're complaining, but I have also had people
look
at me. You
can say complaining.
How come you didn't do the IV? How come you didn't give morphine? How come? And you know what? I have answers for all of that, but I don't need to answer to them. And they don't answer to me either. But here's a good question for you. You bring in a person who's got an emphysema problem, and you bring them into the ER. All is good. You do a perfect handoff. You get your ambulance back in safe. You leave the ER. You're 100 feet from the ER, and some guy crossing the street gets T-boned. He's got a pelvic fracture, pale, cool, diaphoretic. You got no radial pulses. You saw him get hit. You saw him hit the ground. How much time are you going to spend on scene with him? You are outside a trauma center.
You know, I think that's a great point, Dave, but I think that it's also off the real objective of what we're talking about here.
Oh,
and
that's just my first question, because then developmental.
Well, here's the problem, and I think the problem is that we are taught from day one when we're in our EMT course that, you know, there are certain parameters of time that we must do our job within, instead of taking a step back and saying, look at what the situation is, determine what's necessary for the situation, prioritize those things that are necessary, and execute them in the correct priority. Now,
I think you would put it correctly. That's what we teach.
We don't teach that.
I don't know.
What's taught is that you have the gold. You have the golden hour, the golden 10 minutes, or whatever it is.
Those are things that people remember, but that's not what they're taught. And the golden hour is a statistical piece of evidence having to do with survival. It's not an EMS time limit. It's not an OR time limit, the ER time limit. Is likely to happen.
I agree.
Robert David, this is what we, but that's what we end up having. We end up trying to follow that, though. Even
right.
though it's not,
we are fighting time. They're fighting time in the ER. You know, if you look at any hospital, they are dealing with time along, you know, Jayco comes in. You guys with me on that?
Yes,
and they want to know about their, you know, their stroke times, their dry balloon times. They want to know a person comes in with a fever and a rash, how long it took to get a spinal tap. Because if you don't do those things within the right period of time, or at least if you don't do it routinely in the right period of time, and don't hone your routines so that you can minimize the time to the critical interventions, and that's what it's all about. Making sure that you find those things that are critical. There's nothing in the pre-hospital field that goes back to what I was saying.
I'm like, you've got time like the golden hour. That those times are parameters, just like you said, that are set by research on, we have proven if we can get this person to a surgeon within 60 minutes, his outcome is X percentage better than this other patient. You know, and then there's the priority three stuff where there's no research. It's just, hey, I need you to clear the hospital in 3.5 minutes so we can get you another call as quickly as possible. You know, but...
You know, let's turn that argument around to, if you're in a full clinical setting, let's say that you have invasive blood pressure going. Why doesn't CPR then change to what your invasive blood pressure is reading so you have, let's say, a mean pressure of 70 or 80 or something along that line? Why
it's
is
supposed
it still
to.
Left to no?
You're supposed to analyze what you're doing and see why your output isn't good. And if your output isn't good, make sure you're doing everything that you could possibly do right. You know, make sure you're in the right place, pressing hard enough, deep enough, fast enough. Make sure that the volume is there.
But you're not doing that. There's no set numbers off of that in terms of invasive. There's no place in ACLS that has invasive blood pressure along their algorithms for assessment. You assess feeling. Go ahead.
Whoa.
I was just saying, I mean, like, most ERs, I mean, when I worked in the emergency department a couple years ago, I mean, we ran our codes very, very, very different than just ACLS. I mean, I did compressions to try to get my ECCO2 up and all kinds of different things. I mean,
and that's a part of the assessment protocol. But it's not a part of the assessment protocol. It's a part of the assessment, and this is where I was getting in terms of time. It's assessment good judgment. And I think... You know, I happen to know Dave. You know, for listeners who are, you know, first tuning in or tuned in a few times, you know, we all have worked within the tri-state area. I've actually taken Dave's class. He's an awesome instructor and very conscientious. And
$20 cost me for you to say.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But here's the thing. You know, I sort of feel that you're not the norm of instructors. I think that the most instructors want you to walk away with this idea of a sense of urgency to the things that you do, not to a sense of stand back, prioritize, you know, understand what's necessary and prioritize those things that are necessary and do them. So I think that we're constantly faced with that time on scene, clock that stands over our head. So let's say you have somebody that's an extended extraction from an MVA. You know, what happens to that person? As soon as they get them out of the vehicle, because you've wasted, and put the quotation marks of wasted, all this time on scene, now they're rushing him to get to the hospital in less than that golden hour.
Well, the golden hour is an important piece of time.
Yeah, but there's more
statistics. But the 10 minutes on scene
coming out. Wait, there's evidence coming out, Dave, that says the golden hour isn't all of what it was thought to be.
When it comes out, it comes out. I have to believe there's common sense. You know, some things you don't have to do a study for. You know, if a person's going to need surgery and they're critical, the sooner they get the surgery, or at least the sooner they get to the surgeon who can decide when to do the right thing, the better.
But now, Dave, my argument, though, Dave, the thing that I'm trying to say, I guess, is I totally agree with you with that, and I agree that that's what they need, right? We're talking about trauma specifically right now. But my thing is, as the EMS provider and as the person who's trying to get them to the hospital within that period of time, if you overlook something, that if you didn't have that invisible clock sort of breathing down your neck the entire time on that call, that you might see something that you could manage or begin to manage before you got, you know, to the hospital, versus slapping them on the stretcher or on a longboard, taking them to the hospital, only to find out once you get there, like Jar said, that call with a bullet wound to the back or whatever, okay? Something like that happening, where now you look foolish because you didn't see it, and your only defense is, well, I was trying to get here and you know, in X amount of minutes because I didn't want to, you know, get past that time frame.
I think, you know? I think it all comes down to, as all of this does, to outcomes. And the outcomes ought to be not just based upon what your time was. Wow, you know, this guy, Mike, he's got really good times. Nobody survives his rapid time in the hospital because he doesn't do anything for them.
But don't you think so?
And then there's this guy, Jim, who's got 12 minutes on scene.
12
minutes? Well, just let me do that. He's got 12 minutes on scene. Which is way too long for trauma. You know, not you, Jim, but the other Jim.
Okay.
And he does such a great job in his interventions and explaining why when he's on scene that long, giving good report when he can. Sometimes he can't because he's too busy managing an airway. Then he has the driver, say, coming in with a critical airway, and that's all you get? That's all you get. I think the outcomes of what we do are very important, not just the
ends
of what we do and how we integrate the two together, just like Josh was saying.
But back up, Dave. You know, you said that it's very important. I think that the outcomes of what we do are everything.
Of course. To the patient.
And I think that we need to actually back up in our approach and not – I think, look, when you're starting something out, you need to, or you're teaching something to an audience who's learning it for the first time, you need to deliver a simplified message and then build on it as the audience sophistication also builds. Would you agree with that statement?
Absolutely.
Okay. So what we do, what I feel is done, in my opinion, in EMS education and in the way that we run our departments, is the simplified message of time. You need to get this done, you know, in a certain amount of time, is the only message that repeatedly gets through. And then the finessing message of you need to sort out and make the right interventions and prioritize those interventions for the best outcome of the patient becomes sort of a secondary hanger-on to that message. But time, you know, the time you take in doing whatever you're doing is the first thing that gets through and the one that sticks the most. And I think we need to even take a look where we drop that. No, it's the interventions.
There are certainly, you know, I consider time an intervention. That's the way it is. It's like a tincture of, I talk about a tincture of time. Time is an intervention. And I know right from the very beginning, when you look at the skill sheets, if you exceed the time, anything you do after that time doesn't count when you're taking your exam. So right from the get-go, from EMT right up to paramedic, you're timed on the things you do. But time counts. Time, absolutely, it counts, but it's not the only thing.
That's what gets counted. Time isn't the only thing that counts, but that is, like Josh is saying, that is the one thing that is looked at primarily by everybody initially. And then you end up, like you said, Dave, if you took longer, than what, let's say, it was expected to take for a trauma or an MI call or whatever. You know, you have to sort of, like Josh said, finesse your documentation to support why it is that you took longer than 10 minutes, you know, to get a patient to a trauma center, why it took you, you were on scene, it took you longer than 10 minutes or 8 minutes to do a 12-lead on a chest pain call, you know. So you end up, as a provider, again, you've got the time in the back of your mind consistently, and then you end up either not doing interventions because of that or doing the interventions and finding yourself sort of almost defending the proper interventions, you know, because you went over that time frame. Because the time is what the people who are watching everything are looking at most, because that is the most thing that they can measure, you know, the easiest.
Time is an easy measure. You're right. Time is an easy measure.
Well, but there's also there's an aspect that when you're testing somebody, to understand a level of proficiency, I don't think that there's anything wrong with setting a limit on time. I think that's a perfectly acceptable way of testing. Look, when you take a written test, you have so many hours to complete so many hundreds of questions, and that's considered, you know, that's considered a relevant way of testing somebody. You know, one is so the test doesn't take forever, and number two is to say, you know, you need to be able to see these questions and answer them in a reasonable period of time. But let's take a skill. Let's take a basic skill like a KED. You know, when you're in a classroom and you're putting a KED on somebody, I believe, what do you have, 10 minutes to test out and get the KED on somebody?
Yeah.
You know, so something like that? Okay. But in real life, have you ever stuck a KED on somebody sitting inside a car with broken glass, with stuff going on outside, with the patient, you know, in real pain about something else? Have you really gotten that on? You know, and the obstructions that a broken car can present. Have you really gotten that on in 10 minutes all the time? I doubt that.
Of course not.
I mean, right.
The thing is that. Sorry.
So now, go ahead. So now, have you failed that skill because,
no.
Or have you done the patient a misservice because you took longer than 10 minutes to get them in a spinal stabilization so they can be extracted from a car? Of course not.
Well, you know,
so
the thing is, though, like,
go ahead. Sorry.
Well, when you're taught in any education, I mean, especially paramedicine, you know, inevitably you're going to be taught black and white, you know, and then the second you step out of an ambulance, you all of a sudden realize our entire field of work, there is no black and white. It's almost all gray area. Example, exactly what you just said. Black and white is that you should have this AED on in this amount of time. And the gray area is that there's blood everywhere. There's broken glass everywhere. There's 43 firefighters trying to get in the way. There's, you know, so, no, you didn't do a disservice to the patient. It's called a reality, and that's where you just have to chart really well to explain why it took longer.
But Don, my point is that, no, you didn't do a disservice to the patient. As a matter of fact, you did the right thing for the patient, but somebody coming in from a classroom or a taught environment doesn't understand that because of the way we teach that skill. And I think that when it comes down to this whole parameter of time, you know, we really need to teach it's about the job, it's about the priorities of the job, and it's not necessarily how long you should take. You know, if for certain skills, for certain things, you should have a proficiency so it doesn't take up all your patient care, for failure to, for a better word, time.
Yeah.
My opinion, as always.
Well.
What the hell do I know?
Our opinion is right, so that's what's important.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Jim.
Well, listen, I think for the most part, most providers out there are able to stay within these guidelines and stay within these time constraints and perform, you know, their assessments and the interventions that are needed. But I think that there are occasions where that either doesn't happen because of that time constraint. You know, and it can be anywhere because the trauma center is very close to wherever the call is. It could be just something because, like Josh had mentioned, the extrication issue, where by the time you get them out of the car or extricated from wherever they are, it's like, you know, we got to go. We got to get to the hospital, and then you end up overlooking things. You know, and then you end up, you know, you have emergency department people looking at you like you can do your job. And like you said, Dave, you know what? For the most part, most of us can look at that and say, I don't care what they think. I know what I did was right. I know what I did. I did my best. If I just all I could do is manage an airway. If that's all you could do, and you know, then that's it. But, you know, but to a point, there is an element of not liking to be looked at like you didn't do your job, especially when you know that you did, you know. And I think sometimes it's not realistic to expect all the interventions to be done that are available to us for patients, and then when it doesn't get done because of the time factor, we're almost penalized by it, even if that being penalized is just in the perception of what the emergency room is, you know, perceived as.
Did you ever think and have a discussion that what do you think those nurses did when I brought the patient there? And then the doctor came in and did this. And then, you know what? I'm not surprised that the patient died. Have you ever had that conversation? You did, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so we all have those conversations, and the nurses give us the hairy eyeball. We give them the hairy eyeball. Everybody's looking at everybody else all the time. It's not unique. It's not just shoved from the ER to the paramedics. You know, I got this guy. They were bleeding out, and I did this. I did that. I bring him in, and then they put him in a room alone for 3 hours, and what do you think happened? You know, I've heard those conversations. You've heard those conversations. I've been engaged in them. And I think that, you know, when we don't know their entire story, and we don't, we don't know who else is around when they're running to another room and our patient needs, you know, we're attached to one patient. I've actually had that point driven to us, to me. You're attached to one patient, and they've got more than one patient, usually. I mean, usually we come in with one patient. We know the whole story. We know how badly they need care, but we don't know everybody else's care level when we get to the ER. So, you know, they look at us like we've made mistakes. We look at them as if they've made mistakes. They don't know what was going on in the house, on the road, in the back of the ambulance. And we don't know what's going on everywhere in the ER. We don't know how many people banged in sick. We don't know how many. And we don't know about the car full of kids that rolled over and nobody was belted. We don't know that. We just know about our patients as well. And I think that it's hard not to, because we are, most of us are patient advocates, including the nurses and the doctors, and it's hard not to, you know, we don't know what everybody knows. So when we write it down, documenting, eventually it gets explained, although they may not have time to ask us, you know, how come you didn't start an IV? How come you didn't give that? You know, I got somebody asked me, why are you giving
that? But also, you know, I mean, I'll say this, and I, obviously everybody here knows it. I'm new in the EMS for about a year. Now, I worked in a trauma center for about 2 years before that. But I will say that it is a rare day that I am judged by the nursing staff in the ER for, Don, why didn't you get an IV? And because the big thing is that, like, I've proven to them, and not even just the trauma room that I used to work in, you know, in other emergency departments around the metro area that I work, that I've proven to them that I'm a good clinician. And that 99% of the time, or even just 90% of the time, if it's possible that I can get it done, I'm going to. So that no matter what ER I go to around the area I work in, if I go in and I legitimately say, y'all, I'm really sorry. The scene was chaotic. I could barely get a set of vital signs. Everybody in the house was drunk. Nobody could tell me a history of the patient. I don't have IV access, and I'm really sorry. This is what I got. 99.9% of the time, the physician, the respiratory, the nursing, they say, dude, I totally understand. It's fine. Let's get a quick report. Let's get the patient over. You know what I mean? Like, unless the nursing staff is just having a horrific, busy day, I really don't get a lot of flack. Now, granted, I know a lot of paramedics that do a piss-poor assessment and a piss-poor job all the time, and so it doesn't matter. it doesn't matter what happens. They have poor communication skills with the ER staff, and so when they don't come in with bilateral 16 and a 20 in the scalp of the baby, you know, they get judged. But once again, I personally don't really experience it a lot. Now, I focus a lot on my relationship with the ER staff because I've been on their side. I've been on the chaotic side of the emergency department. So I see it from a different perspective. So I really, and I always am trying to stress to both the nursing staff towards us and then EMS towards them that we're all batting for the same team here. We have to be understanding of each other. You know, and so that's just my humble new guy opinion that I don't feel like I get judged that often. So,
but I think you make a good point, Donald, and I think Dave, you make a good point too. As far as we don't know necessarily what the ER staff is going through as well, and I want to make this you know, sort of an us versus the RNs in the emergency room. I'm just sort of saying that judgment or that expectation of what we can do for the patient when it doesn't get done because of these time issues, that is, you know, what ends up happening. I'm not judging the ER staff on that, you know, because they're expecting a certain, like Dave said, we expect, when we hear stories about what happens in the emergency room, we would expect that not to happen. You know what I mean? And when we don't do something, And the staff looks at us like, what do you mean to get an IV? Because they're really expecting it to happen as well. They're not really expecting us not to get that IV. You know what I'm saying? But I think there is that element, though, where you have to have that relationship with the staff so that when you're getting the interventions done 9 times out of 10, and that 10th time you don't get it, then I think it's better understood by the staff because they can realize, okay, this guy does it, you know, all the time, so something must have really been going on with this patient, why they didn't get the IV on this 10th time. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So,
and there's another factor, you know, we've talked about, and maybe it's worth a revisit, but we've talked about the communication and presentation and how we look to the ER staff when we're coming in and delivering a patient, or how we look to a floor when we're doing an interfacility transport, and the doctors and nurses that we interface with. We've talked about that, and, you know, one of the things that came out of those discussions is when you have these two different environments, you know, this internal community under a roof dealing with multiple patients in a chaotic situation, and you have our singular patient or singular focus, but dealing in a transport environment from the field to, you know, this more definitive care, you're going to have some disconnect. You're going to have some, you know, looking over the fence and not quite understanding everything you see. And that definitely is a bidirectional occurrence. You know, it happens from the ED staff looking at the job that we do. It happens from us looking at the job that they do. But what we're more talking about is, you know, what happens when we feel constrained by some arbitrary numbers and then feel that we weren't able to complete our both assessment and treatment. And that's really where we have to step back and say, are we really correctly prioritizing
I didn't know if you're having a stroke there or you're mumbling.
Oh, thanks very much. Thank you. I sometimes do that, especially when I'm in the Poconos. But that's a northeastern thing. You can't all the words, Don, get backed up because, you know, they can only go at such a rate. And of course, being north, I speak very quickly. So I'll try to slow it down for you all. And so you can catch everything I'm saying. Is that more fair? I'll prioritize the words I'm saying as they come at in the order of importance.
Perfect. Going off of what you were saying, I mean, I think, and that's kind of what I started with, is like, priority ones aside, golden hour aside, all that jazz, just your average priority three, when you're having, I don't want to say arbitrary numbers, but when you're having these numbers flash in front of your face that we need you, Jim, we need you, Josh, we need y'all to get done with this priority three patient in this amount of time, and if not, then we might need to talk about other things such as promotion, such as whatever, in the future. You know, I need you to get under this time. You know, I think there's a healthy number there. I think 90% of priority threes can fit into a certain parameter, a certain, there's no reason why you shouldn't be spending
but
any
here you
more
are,
time.
You're categorizing the amount of time a job should take based on the category of its dispatch. And I think that's one of the problems that we have in the EMS world is that we look at, you know, somebody who heard very sketchy information about what this job is about and said, well, an ambulance needs to get here and here's the appropriate level of response we need to send, and then arbitrarily saying, well, based on that, it should take this amount of time. And I really feel that, you know, when we get caught in that, we get caught in a very slippery slope, you know, of saying, well, you've been on scene for an hour during this extraction. Now you don't have any time to make an intervention that you've gotten this person free. Just get them to the hospital. Because really what they have is a surgical disease.
Yeah.
And that's not go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I was just saying, I mean, I'm not talking about something as high priority as that. I'm talking about just an earache, you know, a stub toe. I mean, very low priority. But even still, I don't know.
I get what you're saying. And now you're talking about an efficiency within the workplace of saying that here we have a task that really doesn't need EMS intervention or has a very low threshold for what EMS intervention will provide and saying, okay, look, you really need just to get this, collect this person and get them to the hospital. And that should take X amount of time in order for you to do it and get freed up for your next job. And believe it or not, in this New York City system, we try to call that time management. So, you know, and time management tends to be a sliding scale that condenses closer to the end of your shift.
Yeah. Listen, guys, I think this is one of those topics, I think, where we're not going to come to an agreement or we're not going to have an answer to it. You know, and I think all the points that were made are good points, and I think that there is merit to the time factor. Just I think there's merit to allowing us as clinicians the opportunity to be able to prioritize what a patient needs. But I think that when we do that, we shouldn't have to sit there and try to justify the treatment we gave, you know, based on a timeline, the justification, the treatment we gave or didn't give should be based more on the patient's outcome. And I think that's what's not happening a lot of times, unless it's something where it's, you know, something hits the news or somebody dies like that, then it gets looked at more closely. But on your average patient that you get, that's not really looked at. They're looking at a time that you're punching into a computer, and they're judging what you're doing and your performance based on that and not necessarily always on the patient outcome, because it would take too much time to go ahead for people that, you know, administration levels to go and look at the outcomes of those patients, you know. So that's my two cents. But with that said, I think we'll end the conversation with that before we end up rehashing it again. But
you just want to have the last word, Jim.
Not really. I just want to try to wrap
it's
it up.
It's his show.
That's true. I guess.
We only got 8 minutes left, you know. So, but what I want to do, Donald, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it as always for stopping in. I know you had a long day and jumping on the phone and you know yapping away with us is
time-consuming. Oh, I enjoy it. I really do. I hope I don't, I hope I'm not the young, naive, oblivious. I know I've got a lot to learn from folks like you. But, yeah, I always enjoy calling into the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So before we go, Josh, I wanted to let you maybe I know, Josh, you just released a new product on your website, and I wanted to give you an opportunity. What's that?
Hallelujah, it's finally out.
I wanted you to sort of talk about it a little bit, Josh, because I'm looking at the Facebook page, and I see a lot of people asking questions as far as what it does and how does it work and all that good stuff. So I figured it'd be a good way for you to sort of verbally give a sort of an outline of what the product is and give some people some more information on it so they can go check it out for themselves rather than just seeing a picture of it on Facebook and then wondering, you know, what it is without going to the website. So maybe you could do that real quick before we wrap up.
I would definitely do that, Jim, and I wanted to ask you if you could maybe put up a link on YouTube or something for that little video that you did with that explains the wrench. But essentially, I've come out with a new wrench. It's a completely different format than any others. It has, again, the bottle opener, but it has two bottle openers on it this time for twist-off and pop-top. It has that very concise and condensed window breaker that I have from the TK3, and it's actually an extremely well-made tooling that really gets the job done. It's an oxygen wrench, as always, because that's a tool that many of us still need and still use. And the other thing is it comes in a configuration where you can, you know, really get a good purchase on it. There are a couple of finger holes in it, so you can, really get grip. And the other aspect is it comes around and it sort of protects your knuckles when you're inside a bag or if you even needed to bang on a door. Instead of using that, you know, $3,000 Motorola radio to bang on a door to get somebody's attention, you know, now you have a tool in your pocket that's easy and will get it done nicely as well. It comes
did
with...
Did you mention it had a window punch?
It does have, yeah, I mentioned it has a window punch.
Okay,
and it also, now different for any of my tools, I'm including a pouch that it come in, a nice belt pouch that will fit either a dress belt or a 2-inch, 2.25-inch duty belt. And it also is, the straps are Velcroed with a stiffener in them, so they're actually Molly system compatible. So you can wear them on your tactical gear or put them on a Molly backpack or anything else. So they really, I sort of looked at what I wanted in the field and the type of ease of use and flexibility I wanted in the field, built that into the red. The unique system now.
So Josh, let me just, the only thing I want to maybe give some clarification on, you look at the picture, and it was a couple people on Facebook mentioned it, that it looks similar to brass knuckles, and they're concerned with it being legal or illegal because of that appearance, and maybe you could just address that real quick before we end up tonight.
Well, you know, in the same way that a Maglite flashlight can be used as a club, you know, this certainly has the ability to protect your hand if you were to use it to strike or strike something. But, you know, just like if you were to use a Maglite flashlight as a club or a baseball bat or anything else, you know, you would be responsible for that use.
Right.
You would be responsible for that use. That's not, it's an oxygen wrench first and foremost. It's a tool to be used by EMS. It can even be used, if you wanted to, by bartenders because of how good the bottle openers are in it. But if you misuse it in an off-label way, you know, I can't be responsible for that, you know. And as a matter of fact, just to be sure, I went and got the opinion of a couple of lawyers on it, and they agreed that, or they are the ones who put through the opinion, that just like a Maglite flashlight, it's a tool first and foremost. If you use it for something it wasn't designed for, well, that's on you.
All right. Sounds good. So they can get that. They can go to wantnew.com and see that, right?
Yep. And we're going to try to make it a little bit more accessible, put some more links on the site. I'm slowly but surely getting pictures out so people can see it, and you can get onto the Facebook page on WantNew and take
and
a look
at
it. There's right now.
The link right there, exactly.
Hopefully we'll get that video real soon.
All right, guys, why don't we end there? We lost Donald, so Donald, if you're still listening, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Of course, you're always welcome to call in. Hopefully next week we'll have the Skype issue figured out so we get a better connection. I don't know what the hell was going on with that. So I apologize to the listeners for sort of the scratchier audio quality tonight. But you know what? It's live, and you got to kind of bend and you know, flow with that. So, but of course, Josh, Dave, I appreciate you guys, calling in and adapting to that. And Dave, of course, thanks for your opinion and your input on
this
stuff too.
Opinion.
We love it.
Yeah. It's all opinion. I'm here.
Yeah.
Except, right. You know, when we have Tim on, then it's that.
You hear me?
Oh, listen.
Yes.
Listen. It's good to have the opinions, and like you said, Josh, early on, that we look to provoke thought on the show. We're not looking to give a definitive answer. We want to get that thought going and keep the conversation going on things that we've heard through the grapevine and things that we feel are affecting EMS and, things that people are concerned about, and, to get that conversation going so that maybe some of these things can change little by little. To make things better, for the industry as a whole. So hopefully that'll happen someday. But all right, guys, have a good week, and we will talk soon.
You too, right. Jim.
Take it easy.
And Josh.
All righty.
Take care, Dave. Stay safe.
So long, guys.
All right, everybody, that's it for tonight. Again, thanks for listening. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, I encourage you to send them over to me. My email is contact@emsofficehours.com. Love to hear your input. Love to hear your feedback and suggestions for upcoming shows. Hopefully next week we will have the recorded episode, but we will be live again in the week after that. So until then, guys, as always, Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.